Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you from wherever you are watching. Tonight, we're in for a very special treat because we're going on a quest together, an adventure, a timeless search with the one and only Gary Kitchell. Gary has studied the wisdom teachings for over 35 years. He is a professional astrologer specializing in esoteric astrology. Now, side note here, I have actually, Gary and I share the same birthday, and I actually hired him to do a reading. He was mind-numbingly accurate and ridiculously affordable. I'm just throwing that out there. Now, I'm going to include links to his website down below so you can get in touch with him. But I also want to let you know that Gary has lectured extensively on esoteric subjects, as well as undertaking numerous astrological consultations throughout the UK and in Europe. He joined the Theosophical Society in 1994 as a founding member of the Dundee Lodge and was its first president. Gary is the current organizing secretary for the Theosophical Society in Scotland and the librarian for the Theosophical Society in Scotland charity. Under the auspices of Dr. Douglas Baker, Gary obtained the Claregate College Bachelor of Metaphysics degree in 1994. He was thereafter invited to become a tutor for the course. And between 2010 and 2014, as the director of studies for the Claregate Metaphysics Group, Gary compiled two online audiovisual courses based on the wisdom teachings as outlined by Douglas Baker. That was Foundations in Esoteric Studies and Esoteric Psychology, The Seven Rays, which is one of Gary's specialties. Gary possesses a particular interest in the symbolism of myth and dreams and meditation and its capacity to enable one to practice higher manas or abstract thought, the current frontier of human consciousness. His first book, The Inner Journey, Pathways to Higher Consciousness, has been distributed internationally. And Gary's second work, we premiered it here on this channel together, is called Greek Hero Myths, Symbols of Transformation, and that was released in August last year. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please give a very warm welcome to the one and only Gary Kitchell. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's lovely
Thank
to
you
be
for being here. Again, you are one of our very, very favorites. How are you?
I am absolutely fine, thanks. Managing to survive the climate up here in May. It's been unseasonably cold and damp.
Well, fingers crossed for more sunshine for you. And speaking of gold and glowing, we were going to talk about, I've actually invited Gary to come on because he knows a lot about this subject. And it is something very close to my heart. It is, tonight's subject is the Holy Grail, or the quest for the Holy Grail. And Gary, I'll let you take it away and then we'll just have a little conversation. But if you'd like to, if you're watching and you have some questions in the chat, feel free to drop a comment or a chat question and we will try to get back to you. And you can always contact Gary at his website as well if you have any request, any further information. But Gary, take it away.
So this evening, we're considering the Grail quest. Symbolically, this represents what Socrates referred to as the jeweled way. This is the river crossing described by Indian teachings, whereby one ventures from the shore of everyday life to the shore of transcendence. Theosophy calls this the path of return, the return to the source of our being, this entailing a series of initiations. The legends of the Grail and King Arthur are pagan in origin and derived from Celtic myth, especially Welsh. And later these were infused by concepts related to mystical Christianity. Interestingly, the medievalist and folklorist Jessie Weston stated in her work, From Ritual to Romance, that the knights and the ladies of Arthurian romances are Celtic gods and goddesses in human form. Now, when we consider the Grail, it's described as a sacred vessel. It possesses magical properties of healing, bliss, and spiritual transformation. This concords with earlier myths relating to magic cauldrons and cornucopia. The Grail is not a physical object, rather like the Atman described in the Katha Upanishad. There's a verse in this Upanishad which states, though it is hidden in all things, the universal self does not shine forth, yet is seen by subtle seers of subtle mind and subtle sight. Joseph Campbell, the greatest mythographer of the 20th century, described the veil as an inexhaustible vessel from which energy pours into creation. It's the unquenchable fountain of source. Jessie Weston, she argues that the Grail story relates to an ancient ritual, which in its lower or exoteric form relates to the processes of nature with an emphasis upon vegetation, whilst the esoteric form, which we are particularly interested in this evening, relates to the spiritual teaching concerning humanity and our relationship to the divine source and ways in which we can effect union with what Theosophy calls the soul or higher self.
It is a common thing, though, still, that the Grail is a physical object, much like the Da Vinci Code. They're going to find it. It will then bring man earthly power, and that will elevate them to wealthy. I'm not sure. I think the majority of people on our planet do believe that this Holy Grail is a physical object that is lost somewhere, like the crown jewels. What do you think about that?
Well, it's an interesting concept. When the Grail teachings were infused by mystical Christian teachings, the Grail was described as the cup of the Last Supper.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I think it is from these writings where this is developed, what you're talking about. Most of the Grail stories occurred between 1150 and 1250, kind of about the time of the Crusades and before the Inquisition. And we had the works La Quest del San Graal and L'Histoire del San Graal, the first one being part of the Vulgate cycle attributed to Cistercian monks, and the next one a follow-up. And this is when the Grail legend took on the concepts of mystical Christianity. And it was these works which created Galahad, the Virgin Knight who was destined to achieve the Grail. I'll be talking about this a little bit later.
Okay.
But I feel this is a common mistake we all make in life, myself included. We're looking for bliss out there. We think something in the material world is going to infuse us with the energies of what Theosophy would call the higher planes of consciousness. This is the happy ever after of the fairy tales. It is symbolic of one attaining a transcendent state of being.
Oh,
so considering the Grail from a spiritual point of view and as a theosophist, I would state it's a symbol of the soul or higher self. It's a divine receptacle. Theosophy informs us that we are in essence monads, sparks of a great divine flame, and the soul is the instrument of the monad. And when we connect sufficiently with the soul, undergoing what Theosophy calls the third initiation, this is the individuation of Jung, the coniunctio of the medieval alchemist, the Grail is then the receptacle for the energies of the monad. Of course, to achieve this, we must embark upon the spiritual quest. We must unfold the symbolic petals of the soul of knowledge, love, and sacrifice. Interestingly, there was a Bavarian knight, Wolfram von Eschenbach, who wrote the book Parzival about the Grail quest. And he related the Grail to the philosopher's stone of the medieval alchemists. This is a symbol of the awakened self, of course. And very interestingly, the questing knight Parzival, when he heals the main king, the Fisher King, which we're going to be talking about soon, he then becomes a king, third initiation. We are then connected to the monad. We are aware of the evolutionary intent for our planet, or as Jung would say, an individuation. We can consciously express the energies of the archetype. We then become the Grail and we heal the Fisher King or the main king. There are many stories there of cauldrons of regeneration. Manannan, the seed deity of Irish and Manx myth, had such a cauldron. In the Mabinogion, Bran the Blessed and a group of warriors go in pursuit of a cauldron that can bring dead warriors back to life. The Irish god Dagda has an inexhaustible cauldron. These are just a few examples. There is a cauldron of Anvin. This is a Welsh otherworld. This is an idyllic land of peace and plenty. Here there was a cauldron of rebirth tended by nine maidens. We see a correspondence here with the nine muses of Greek myth. And all these tales describe the higher self. This is a medieval perception of the higher self. The night, of course, is the spiritual path. We pursue the path in our own particular way. We undergo these various adventures in pursuit of the sacred vessel, which offers healing, bliss, and spiritual transformation. And when we do this, we don't do it for ourselves. We do it for humanity and the planet as a whole, because we are all part of the same greater being, the planetary logos. Whom does the Grail serve? Well, our soul, or higher self, is part of this greater being. So the Grail, or higher self, serves the intent of this greater being, and therefore the various kingdoms of nature.
So, Gary, I wanted to ask you about Galahad and the Virgin Knight, please.
Sure. Well, Galahad was a literary creation who first appeared in the Vulgate cycle attributed to Cistercian monks. And these works formed the basis for Malory's La Morte d'Arthur, considered the greatest book in the English language. Now, Galahad is a symbol for spiritual purity, heroism, honor, and virtue of the highest degree. And these are essential qualities if we are to ascend to the spiritual heights. In the myths involving Galahad, he appears at Camelot and is knighted. Then the next day, a sword called the Sword of the Red Hilt is found in a stone floating in the river near Camelot, and none of Arthur's established knights are able to extract the sword from the stone. But Galahad proceeds to take out the sword from the stone very easily. He then sits at the round table, occupying what is known as the Siege Perilous, or Perilous Seat. This is the seat that can only be occupied by the knight who is going to succeed on the Grail quest. It would be fatal for any other knight to occupy that seat. This then completes the fellowship of knights. Now, taking the sword from the stone, just as Arthur did, the sword is a symbol for the personality, and the stone represents material entrenchment. And it is only when we possess the necessary psychological integration, physical, astral, mental bodies functioning as one, when we possess the necessary purity and refinement of personality, that the soul can then extract the personality from material entrenchment. I mentioned this, I think, in our interview on the Greek myths book, where Theseus uncovers his swords and sandals from under a rock. It's saying the same thing. And of course, Excalibur is given to Arthur. You have the Lady of the Lake giving out, taking Excalibur. Now, the Lady of the Lake, I see that as it's the goddess providing gifts to the spiritual aspirant who has demonstrated worthiness to use these instruments. It's like in the Greek myths, Athena, the patron of the heroes, you know, providing gifts to Heracles, to Odysseus, to Jason, and so on. It's a different way of portraying this, how when we tread the path, whilst we are challenged by the goddess, nature tests her, also we will be assisted. Then the Siege Perilous, occupying that seat, demonstrates a capacity to cope with the forces of the unconscious, which are going to be unleashed when one embarks upon the spiritual quest. In the Grail legends, they enter the forest of adventure. As Madame Blavatsky said, when one treads a path, all that is good and all that is evil surfeits. We have the theosophical dweller on the threshold coming to play. Everything we have done in our previous lives, the various karmic debts to be paid off and so on. So we must be psychologically integrated if we are going to succeed in our quest. Interestingly, the round table is a mandala-like symbol. It symbolizes the wholeness one is seeking when treading the spiritual path. Now, in the myth involving Galahad, the knights are seated for supper and the grail appears and they each obtain a partial vision of it. Gawain then vows to go in quest of the grail and all the other knights decide to embark upon this course of action. And they all leave behind their noble and most honorable lives in the court of Camelot, the quest for the grail. Now, this, of course, is symbolic of the first initiation, what Joseph Campbell calls the call to adventure, when one awakens to higher things. I mean, these knights are the medieval equivalent of rock stars. They have all that one desire, you know, in terms of prestige and respect and beautiful women and so on. But they are aware of the grail, the higher self. And suddenly that becomes the most important thing. So they go off in quest of the grail. Now, they all enter the forest adventurous at their own chosen point. Now, this represents the fact that when we tread the path, we have to do it our own particular way. Whilst there are the tried and tested methods described in all religious and esoteric teachings, we have a unique evolutionary history which we must address. And very importantly, we each have our own unique soul's purpose as revealed by the esoteric natal chart. So we tread the path our way. The mythic quest is our own. It's an existential one. And the various adventures of symbolized in the Grail legends, they'll come to us in different ways, you know, when we are treading the spiritual path. And that's important to bear in mind. You know, the various challenges the knights undergo, they'll surface in our lives in different ways according to our circumstances in the world. It's all about inner transformation. That is the essence of it, so that we may attain the grail. Mm-hmm. And there's this very other important character. Now, in some versions, he's described as the Fisher King, in others as the Wounded King or Maimed King. Now, he has been wounded in the genitals, the old medieval writings say in the thighs, but he's been wounded in the genitals and he's rendered impotent. And more than that, he cannot engage in sovereign union with his land. So the land becomes a wasteland. No water is flowing, nothing can grow. And when the knight attains the grail, he redeems the wasteland. And the main king or Fisher King is a symbol for our spiritual essence, the monad, which is effectively wounded or handicapped through incarnation in matter. And it's only by us becoming the grail knight, undertaking the quest, attaining the grail, that the monad then can demonstrate what the wisdom teachings call spiritual staying power, radiating and expressing hitherto latent qualities through its instruments, the soul and personality. But that, in my opinion, is what the Grail legends are talking about. Of course, one has to consider that these were written in medieval times, and we consider this from the standpoint of the medieval psyche. But like any other myth or legend, it is timeless. And it is any hero myth that is describing this quest for initiation for the betterment of humanity and the planet as a whole.
Gary, when you're talking about, again, these parables. So the like pulling the sword out of the stone, everybody thinks it has to do with physical strength and this particular lifetime and this particular body. And this is the only thing. It's somehow we're frozen in this world of the five senses and the earthly world. But this is a journey that every living being, especially humans, as we're at this apex where we are, to go ahead and, as you mentioned, self-transform. That is our responsibility, to transform. Self-transformation, responsibility, reflection and alignment and application. These are all the things that we do with these ancient teachings of theosophy, of the ageless wisdoms. If somebody's watching right now and they're like, oh, that's BS. There's no grail for me. That's not the truth. There is a grail for you. It's inside of you. That's what I say. How would you say it to somebody who's watching right now, knowing that you have access, this quest that you're on, you're living it right now. All these trials and tribulations in your life, all of these ups and downs and heartaches, and you're on the quest. It's you right now. What would you say to them watching right now if you could tell them where is their grail?
Well, it is within. It is the immortal aspect of one's being. It is the aspect of one's being which has chosen the incarnation in question. It has chosen their circumstances, their parents, their upbringing, their education, their wealth or lack of it. And all of this is an opportunity to grow. It is right for the particular person. The personality, of course, is an instrument of the soul. And it takes many lives on the wheel of rebirth for the soul or higher self to perfect that personality so it can function as its instrument, where it can radiate and express divine persistent will, love wisely applied, wisdom lovingly applied, compassion, abstract thought. And this really, it ties in well with the voice of the silence and HPB talking about the potter with the wheel. That is what the higher self is like. My mentor, Douglas Baker, would often use that analogy, where the personality is being perfected into this this instrument. Consider the potter creating an urn. And then when that creation is complete, it is fired. That is the fire of the burning ground of initiation. In the grail myth, that is the attaining of the grail and the healing of the maimed king or fisher king.
And these grail myths have come through all parts of Earth, not just King Arthur. They've been around forever, yes?
Very much so. Interestingly, the Jessie Weston, I mentioned her earlier, she was talking about different ancient rituals.
Yes.
She's mentioned Vedic ones. She's mentioned Adonis, the Greek myth, Attis, the Phrygian one. No, these archetypal events occur throughout our world, very much so. The grail is just one way of looking at the spiritual path. It's a great one for me, certainly, because I was born in Scotland. You know, it's part of the British Isles where the various grail myths originate, although you would have to include France as well. I think in those times, it's interesting because the grail origins are Celtic. And of course, you had the Celts in Britain, then you had the Anglo-Saxon invasions, and then you had the Norman invasion. So the Normans are at the top of the tree hierarchically, then the Anglo-Saxons, then the Celts. And a number of the Celts went over to France, and the stories were imparted there. And the grail also brings in certain Sufi elements because the Moors were in Spain at that time and these things were transported into France as well. So in parts of the UK, particularly Wales and in France and Brittany, except you had these wonderful, wonderful grail stories.
Well, you mentioned to me in the past, you've said, very clearly, you said the ultimate love, and I've used this over and over again, the ultimate love is not with another person or another thing or any other event, nothing physical. It is with your higher self, with the higher self that is trying to love and lead you through this lifetime. But you made it sound so understandable. You said, just imagine what that love would be like when it's with your higher self. And I have never forgotten that. Would you like to expand a little bit about that for our audience?
I'll relate it to the Grail as well.
Yes, please.
In India, the symbolism of the lingam and yoni, or phallus and vagina, is symbolic of the transcendent creative principle, Parabrahman, pouring out its energies into the womb of creation. And this is basically the transcendent then giving rise to creation, the god and goddess in embrace. If we think of the theosophical paradigm, you have Mahat, the universal mind, and the plane below you have Fohat, the energies of cosmic ideation. And here we have the father, mother, and son, the god and the goddess, and the son, the monad, who's going to undertake the evolutionary journey, the son of necessity. Now, the father and mother are the god and goddess. They are in essence one, but they appear as two. And it's symbolized by this hieros gamos, macrocosmically by the lingam and yoni. When we tread path, I could say that is the reason we are here, to effect this hieros gamos, this sacred marriage, whereby spirit and matter, male and female, light and dark, everything is unified and fused into one. This is Jung's individuation, the reconciliation of opposites, which we see in the center of the theosophical logo. Now, in the Grail legends, in the Vulgate writings, we have the spear of Longinus and the cup which caught Christ's blood, symbolic of the Grail. And this is phallic symbolism, according to Jesse Weston, and it makes sense to me. You have the bleeding lance and you have the cup catching the blood. Also, we could look at the bleeding lance in terms of the wisdom teachings as the rod of initiation. We talk of Sanat Kumara, the representative of the planet Relogos, with the flaming diamond used in third, fourth, and fifth initiations, as described by classical esoteric teachings. Thinking of the Fisher King, it's interesting that the Fisher King can relate to Christ as the Fisher of men, pulling them out of the unconscious up to the transcendent state of being. This is the Christ within, of course. This is the Grail. In Indian teachings, a fish is the first avenue of Vishnu. The fish avatar was transferred to Buddha. Mahayana scriptures describe the Buddha as a fisherman, drawing fish from the ocean of samsara, the wheel of rebirth, to the light of salvation. But the Fisher King, as I said, is wounded. We call this wound the Dolorous Stroke. And spirit, as I said, is effectively impotent coming into matter. The monad, of course, it's very important because it functions as the consort of the archetypal cosmic goddess. And this sacred marriage, this hieros gamos, has got to occur. The redeeming of the wasteland is important too. Joseph Campbell described the wasteland as the leading of an inauthentic life, not following the intent of the soul. And of course, T.S. Eliot wrote the famous poem in the 1920s called The Wasteland. It's really leading a spiritually arid existence. But when the Grail is attained, or initiation, the king is healed in the wasteland, redeemed. And this is an archetypal theme throughout our world. In the Vedas, we have Indra slaying Vritra, allowing the monsoons to break. And also, I think what's relevant here is Patanjali's, what he called the rain cloud of knowable things. As theosophists, as we're giving lectures to a handful of people, as are many other spiritual groups, seem to be banging our heads off a brick wall. But as well as this being good for our own development, this is helping to assemble Patanjali's rain cloud of knowable things. And one day that will precipitate. And looking at it from the point of view of humanity and the planet, this rain cloud of knowledge will precipitate. And relieve us of the spiritual aridity. So we can look at the wasteland in terms of our own psyche, but in terms of the planet.
We do need to step up and take care of where we live. It isn't just about an individual growing spiritually, one human being. It is all of us on the planet that we live, and the planet which is alive, and a planet which is part of something that is much, much bigger than we even ever imagined. And we are connected with all of that. That is the microcosm and the macrocosm. All of this is symbolic about our journey, and everything teaches us. Everything in nature teaches us. And it is so beautifully brilliant in the creation of the, like in the stanzas in the Secret Doctrine that we were just studying and talking about the father, mother, breath coming out, the virgin sea and all that. It's all in there and it's so beautiful. So if you're looking to learn more and you want to find out what's going on here, what we're talking about, this is the Holy Grail. You've heard it before and most likely you'll think of a cup. And you'll think that it's something elusive buried in the ground somewhere. What Gary is explaining is that this is what any of you can find out for yourself if you look through these sacred texts and don't take them literally. Look at them as the allegories and the myths and the stories that they are. They're all teaching you something. But the grail is within all of us. It is literally within all of us. And I wanted to, and you can find it if you look. And how do you do that? A lot of people ask, and how do I do that? And I say, well, you don't have to take it from me. I'm not going to be able to do it for you. I can point the way and I can tell you that I'm on my journey. We're all on the path together at different places on the path, looking for the solutions to overcome the physical world and to elevate to a higher self, to find and relate with our higher selves so we can learn and grow on this path. And it's never perfected. I can't say I perfected it. Gary, have you perfected it?
In a word, no.
So what we're doing, we're just doing the best that we can, trying to be better than we were yesterday. And simply, the more that we learn, the more that you study, I mean, there's so many things that Gary's given us, so many things in tonight's talk, where you can go through the Galahad and the Virgin Knight. You can talk about the Fisher King or Maimed King. You can talk about, King Arthur and all of these legends, Percival, all of these. And you can think, okay, no, wait, the Da Vinci Code, that's it. You know, I'm going to follow that. All of those are written, and there are stories and fanfare that has been created, but there is an underlying theme in there that says that it belongs to you. And I just really, when I asked Gary if he would do this episode, I said, can we try to get the message out there that the hope, that the grail is closer than we think? It is inside if one would be willing to look for it. So it isn't a cup. It isn't a physical object. It just simply isn't. Do you have anything you'd like to say on that for those who would argue with you that it certainly is, and they're very close to finding it and becoming multi-billionaires? Because that's the kind of stuff I get.
I'm not disputing in any shape or form there was a cup of the Last Supper, for example. And where that is located, I do not know. But what I would say is the true riches are within. And if you build the bridge to the soul, what we call the Antakarana or Rainbow Bridge, through meditation, service, compassion, love, abstract thought helps also, then you draw closer to the grail. I mean, this is the very essence of why we are here. You know, we are here to develop and express our spirituality, and the grail legends offer a symbolic representation of this and how we may go about this. If the grail myth doesn't appeal to one, fair dues. You know, we find our own way of treading the path. The knights enter the forest at their own chosen point. They don't follow someone else's path, and neither must we. We are in that respect. But I mean, if people want to go searching for a grail, perhaps want to study archaeology and get a team and go and do an excavation, then thankfully we live in a world where they are free to do that. But that's not where I'm looking for the grail. And it's not where other theosophists are looking for the grail, at least not to the best of my knowledge.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I didn't want to poo-poo anybody who might be looking for the Last Supper's cup, because there very well could be one out there. But I guarantee you, from my understanding, when you find it, that cup is not going to save you from yourself or elevate you to a higher level of consciousness. It is my understanding that nothing is really holier than anything else than you right now, where you are. I know that there is what they call sacred sites and locations and clothing and items. Do you find, Gary, let me ask you, somebody who studies myths and legends, do you find, say there is a cup from the Last Supper, would that cup be any different than this water bottle to you? Or your water bottle, or your coffee cup?
Not my area of expertise. Obviously, if this cup is related to Christ, then there may be a very sort of powerful magnetization, but it's not going to be an instrument of spiritual transformation per se.
Right.
As far as I'm concerned, or as far as I understand teachings, it may be an aid in some respects. Some people like to use crystals, for example. It may have a certain power, but the grail is within.
Yes.
The grail quest is our journey towards higher states of consciousness and ultimately towards enlightenment. In Indian teachings, as I mentioned at the beginning, the crossing of the shore from that of everyday life to that of transcendence. And of course, that crossing is very, very challenging. And all the challenges on that river in India are depicted in the Grail myths by the adventures of the questing knights. River crossing is St. Christopher, where he carries a young child across the river. It gets heavier and heavier. Then he feels as if he's got the weight of the world on his shoulders, and he gets to the other side, and the child reveals that he's Christ. But that is symbolic of the fact that we must take on a greater share of the planetary karma, etc., when we are treading the path.
Yes.
My mentor, Douglas Baker, emphasized with the planetary karma, it's not a case of dividing out equally amongst all of the monads operating through the Earth scheme, but rather those on the path and who are more advanced are expected to take on a greater share, which is, of course, the esoteric teaching of the Christ, dying for the sins of humanity, taking on a great share of the planetary karma.
I love that you talked about that. I remember you talking about that in the past. I'd love to touch on that. Again, really quick, if you're on the path and you're moving forward, you feel the responsibility to do something, not just to elevate yourself so you can go float around on a cloud somewhere. You have responsibility here to help everybody and everything. And as he mentioned, the responsibility to take on the karma and carry that forward. You are here to be of service through compassion and service together, altruism. You mentioned before, because I do see the Christian folks saying, Jesus died for my sins, so therefore I'm saved. And I asked you this question one time. I said, can you explain this planetary karma that this Christ consciousness or Christ took on to go ahead and elevate? It took on more karma than he was responsible for. Can you elaborate on that story a little bit before we close, please?
My mentor, Douglas Baker, I think it's in his work, Jewel in the Lotus, of which there's a lovely new edition being published, mentioned that even a master cannot give accurate discourse on karma because it's such a vast subject. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to duck out of it, though. I mean, in simple terms, as I said, the Christ is taking on a great share of the planetary karma to enable others to tread the path more easily. That's how I would see it in very simple terms. So using Christian language, it's not entirely wrong if you want to describe sin as becoming too involved in matter at the expense of the higher self. And all that entails, and that is not wrong, but that's a bit like a little tale I was given when I studied the Claregate course about the river and the rope, which is an analogy of the life of Christ, where there's that allusion to the shore of transcendence we find in the Indian teachings, but this great hero for the benefit of humanity took this rope right across this dangerous river and created a link so that other people could follow the same path using the rope. But a council of elders got together and said, God, that crossing is so damn difficult. Why don't we simply worship the hero, and then when we die, our bodies will float across the river? I think that is a lovely tale. It's very, very powerful.
Yes, perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you for compiling all of this information. Again, Gary is amazing. You are amazing, Gary, at Myths and Legends and all of these. He's written the books, and remember the books that he's got. I'll point you, just click on the website down below, and there are two books out. Are you working on anything else right now? Are you working on another book right now, Gary, while I get ready to reiterate these?
I'm considering a book on the Grail Quest.
Are you really? Yes.
I haven't fully made
it. I think you should.
Yet. Reading different books on it. I'll probably spend quite a few months doing that and then decide if there's something a little bit unique that I can add, and then I'll put something together. It would be about the symbolism, of course, and hopefully empowering people towards treading the spiritual path.
Yes. And also do look for the symbolism. If you're researching right now on your own, don't take it at face value. Don't take it literally. Look for the symbolism, because it's talking about you. You're the hero in all of those myths and legends, and you're on your quest right now. And I learned a lot of this talking with Gary. He is able to explain these myths like nobody else. He has the Greek Hero Myths, which is the most recent book that came out last August. And it's called Greek Hero Myths, Symbols of Transformation. We also have the Inner Journey, Pathways to the Higher Self, which we got a chance to talk a lot about tonight. That is distributed internationally and also available on his website. And I will put that up in the links down below. Gary, I love you. Oh, also don't forget Esoteric Astrology. He's able to read in a way that is, I'm not kidding you, I say this all the time, our friends call him modern day Dr. D. And it's true, because I'm just going to give a testimonial right here. I had him read for me last year because we share the same birthday. I thought, well, you know, it could be hit and miss. Bang on. And we talked about, remember, it's a guide. The mandala of your star spread is a guide for you. It's a guide, right? It's not an absolute. It's not kind of fortune telling. It's just a guide. And you're able to run that through and read that. And it's been interesting how very accurate you have been. So
thank you. I mean, it's, again, this relates to Douglas Baker. It is his form of esoteric astrology. There are unique techniques involved here. So I'm not claiming any credit for it, other than possessing sufficient intelligence to read charts and hopefully be inspired from within.
You're good at it.
That happens with any astrologer. I think all astrologers attract their own clients, you know, when the time is right.
Well, we're looking out at, instead of just thinking that there's sparkly stars and we're walking around this planet that we have nothing to do with, we're just a separate entity. We got to look, everything is connected. Everything is there. There are signs and symbols, and nature is there to teach and instruct if we would only look. So esoteric astrology is a part of that, which is extremely valuable.
The Grail Quest, yeah.
Gary, let's close on one question. Who does the Grail serve?
In terms of the wisdom teachings, the higher self is functioning through the personality with a particular intent, as revealed by esoteric astrology. That intent relates to the purpose of the planetary consciousness, what theosophy calls the planetary logos, which is a chakra within a greater being called the solar logos. So the Grail is essentially serving the planetary logos, but is also aligned then to the solar intent. The entire evolutionary purpose is served by the Grail, but that includes serving humanity in the various kingdoms of nature.
Thank you so much, Gary Kidgel. I love you more than words. You are such a gift. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Anne.
Welcome to the end of the video. Here we are backstage at Living Theosophy 2.0. So if you like the video, please like, subscribe, hit the bell icon so you can be notified when Living Theosophy has a brand new video. And there's lots of things happening here at Living Theosophy. And I, for a long time, didn't want to ask if you would like and subscribe because I was trying to be humble. But without the algorithm, these teachings can't get out to where they need to be. So I'm going to say, please like and subscribe. And I look forward to seeing you back here. I love you.